Okay. Hey, it's really good to be here this morning. Right. No, you got to promise me, man. Are you promising me? Okay. Okay. Anyway, it's been quite a year, and I think that there's a lot of things that we don't understand. In terms of the work that Connie and I have done over the years working in the Muslim world, I would have hoped for breakthrough a long time ago, just outrageous breakthrough, you know, phenomenal breakthrough in so many places, and it's not happening. It's happening bits. I mean, there are more Iranians now coming to Christ than there have been in hundreds of years of missionary work. Iranians are coming to faith in Jesus. We know what's going on in China. There's Iraqis. We have a friend who was in Syria. I was a coach, pastoral coach for his team. And they were there for like 10 or 12 years and had some contacts. They may have had one or two people come to Christ, for which we're grateful. But now since all this war has been going on over the last 15 years or so and everything, there's been hundreds of Syrians that have come to faith in Christ in Syria and as refugees in Turkey especially. And I pastored a church in Ankara for a couple of years, and we had a lot of the Iranian refugees there, and then the Syrians and Iraqis were starting to come in, and there are entire churches. There's an Iraqi church in Istanbul, Turkey. And these are Muslims that have come to faith in Christ. It's like, seriously? So it is happening, right? There is that. But why, and why here, and why not there? There's just a lot of questions. And I don't have to write them down because they're pretty much, you know, here. I don't know. Is it going to matter? I don't know. How's that going to work? You know, you get to heaven, and the Lord goes, boom, it's all clear. Okay. Thanks for that. Appreciate that. So I was flying up, Daryl and Dennis picked me up from the airport, and what a wild ride that was. Now, we had a good time, did we not? We had a good time. We truly did. I'll give you details if you're interested later, but no, it was a good time. But I was telling them a story about things happen when I fly, you know, it's like, what? So I was getting on the airplane in Phoenix, and because of the, you know, I've flown a lot with American Airlines, I have status, and so they gave me an upgrade to business class. Of course, it's on the plane seats five people, right? I mean, it's not a big, it's a CR-700, so I'm not real big, you know, but at least that's on the inside. And so I got upgraded, so I'm in 3C, which is an aisle. So they have one seat on one side, two on the other, and so there's 3A, then C and D over here. So I was sitting, getting ready to get on, and there's this lady that came up, probably my age, and she had a little carrier on a little cart thing of a dog, one of the cutest dogs, and there was just a little dog in there. And then this other thing she had over her carry-on, and it seemed really heavy, and she was putting... So she's like this with the dog in front, and she's trying to keep a straight line, and I'm going like, it's not a straight line. So she came up right basically in front of me, and they call for those in group one, and on she went, and I just noticed her ticket was 3A. Well, because I knew she was coming across the aisle from me. And the Lord spoke to me. There you go. I said, really? Okay. So, I mean, I knew that there was someone that he had put in my life, or put me in her life. So we get up to the thing to put our ticket there, our boarding pass, and she couldn't quite reach it because they want you to do your own, you know. And then he did it, and I heard him saying something to her. And he said, well, you know, that carry-on might not fit. Because on these CR-700s, you know, it's on one side, it's nothing. It's like a glove compartment. And on the other side, it's just enough for, like, you can get a carry-on there, but it can't be way high, right? Just, you know, you've seen those, right? So I knew hers would fit. So I got it all mapped out. Seemed heavy. She's got a dog. She's my partner across the hall. I'm going to help her. So this guy says to her, that may not work fit up there. She goes, well, it's my husband. It's ashes. Or on this urn, and there's other stuff in there, but it's just precious to me. I can't check it in to the deal. I got to take it on. So I thought, well, fair enough. She's in business class. I know there's room, right? We're first on the plane. She was number one. I was number two. So I know there's, I know it's going to work. There's going to be space. But he goes, and then I just couldn't believe it. I just thought, what? He said, well, you know, you may have to take it out. You can just, like, hold the urn. I'm going like, really? So she goes, she just said something compliant, you know, and then she goes on, and I get up to him. Oh, I really wanted to have a conversation, but there were 30 people behind me, and I really wanted to be here this morning. And so I said, you know, that she's going through a very tough time, difficult time. That's her husband's ashes there. She's lost her husband. That's what that means. So he goes, yeah, these are, there's these difficulties. And I said, well, it's her personal pain. I said, I'm on her side. I'm going to help her. I'm just so. And he offered no, you know, it's like, didn't even condolence. He's like, well, you may have to hold the urn. I'm going, buddy. So we I know. So we got down the, on the ramp going in, and we're heading toward the airplane. And I said, excuse me, I heard that conversation there, and I'm really truly sorry for your loss. So thank you. I said, well, and I want to help you. And she said, one of these Portuguese descent, I don't know if that means anything, but she's, you know, of course my wife's like that, and she's not Portuguese. I can do this. I said, you know, I know I'm not trying to insult you. I know you're totally capable. It's not a thing where man helps woman or whatever. I mean, I know you can do it, but I really want to help you. Please let me help you. And she goes, okay. So she pushed the dog. I got the cart. I got it in there. And sure enough, there was room up there. So I'm sitting there. It kind of dawned on me as we're going down the runway. Yeah, I got her husband above my head here, right? Kind of. I mean, you know, it's just, it was just kind of like, that's never happened before. And so we got to the other, we landed, and I pulled it down for her, and I put it up for her. And she insisted on taking it herself. And I said, okay. I said, but I really went up? No. So I got to do it. So she moved on out, you know, slowly and like that. We got into the baggage claim, and I think that your baggage claim service here is probably the slowest in the world. It kind of fits the slow thing. I mean, one flight, small plane, not full, and 2 days later I'm going, you know. So I was there getting the luggage in. This gal goes, I saw her over there, and I really felt like they're prompting me. I gave her my card and I said, look, my wife and I are pastors, and I really am sorry for what you experienced. You obviously you're strong, you're capable. There seems to be grace for you to be getting through this, and I'm happy for that for you. But if there's anything, if you just need to talk to somebody, call us, and you can talk to me or you can talk to my wife. But said, also, there's this church where I'm speaking on Sunday. I was hoping she would. She lives in Cambria. She's moving her place to Cambria. So I said, so I know a church that I think you'd like this place. And the pastor's kind of like a really good friend of mine, and there's some good folks. Why don't you just, if you feel you need something, if you want to expand your support group, I'm just suggesting I know a good place. She thanked me, took my card, and pushed her dog out the door. And I'm like, okay. So that was it. And I've never had that kind of experience before. It's not usual, but it seems like there's just always someone, you know, for whom the Lord can open a door. I want to talk about open doors this morning, but first of all, I want to share some slides with you from my trip to Bosnia and Croatia. You know, I got back from Malaysia, as you know, because I was here after that, got back from Malaysia on the 2nd of March of last year. I had cataract surgery on the 9th and the 16th, and then everything shut down. And so for all this time, I've been home, and I've been really kind of content. I mean, I felt like God gave me peace about it. It was kind of a sabbatical, and I prepared a lot of materials. I'm set to go on that, and so I'm just was kind of waiting for the open door, but I wasn't anxious about it. About 3 months ago, I started getting anxious. I thought, I got to go. And I said, well, Lord, if this is me or you, actually, I don't care. You know, I want to go, you know. So I just, I said, well, look at the door. And they use this term, Indonesia is not open. When will Indonesia open up? Later. Malaysia, later. Philippines, later. Vietnam, later. And it's, they're not open now, and they're still not open. And I thought, well, but I just need them to be open. They're closed right now. And so I said, well, I can't travel, so this must be me and not you if I can't go because the doors are closed. That's obvious. I felt like the Lord would say, well, you know, where else have you been? I said, oh, might there be an open door somewhere else? And so I went online, and I've been to Bosnia 3 or 4 times. I've never ministered in Croatia, but so I Googled that, and they're open. So I called my friend in Bosnia and said, you know, Dario, I need to come, and I need to come. I want to come soon. So we set it up for the following month, which was August, the last 2 weeks of August. I said, do you know anybody in Croatia? He goes, yeah, I've got a friend named Mario. So that's kind of Dario and Mario, I thought. It seemed kind of, you know, nice. It seemed like it worked. So I got a hold of the guy, and he had never heard about me at all. And he says, well, so you're a friend of Dario's. So what do you do? I said, well, a few things. I speak, basically. I'm a teacher, preacher. So I sent him my resume. He said, well, you can come, and you can just sit or share a little bit. Okay. That's cool. I just want to make an introduction. So then he gets back to me and says, why don't you speak? I said, okay. So he set up where I spoke, and that was a door really that opened up for that my friend in Bosnia set up. So suddenly the Lord just said, look, I've opened this door. And, you know, the thought occurred to me that when there are restrictions and we're not able to do what we want to do, then it's obvious, isn't it, when the door opens that God did something, right? It's okay. It's like, all right. And so, but if you don't have to work at it, then it's, what is it? So when things are good, and I've never had restrictions in traveling until the last 18 months. So who exactly is that? I just get a good idea about going to see Pastor Joel in Malaysia and set that up, and did I open that door? Or was that really the Lord opening the door? And I thought about that passage where Jesus teaches us to pray. He says, what, give us this day our daily bread. What's that about? I mean, all these diets now are, you know, no, don't eat any bread, right? I think that's Antichrist because he's the he's the bread of life, right? I mean, he's not the apple of life or whatever. So, but anyway, it's like, give us this day our daily bread. What does that mean? I mean, you know, we were poor when I was a boy for a while until we got to California. My dad, who was a hard worker, could get fruit for his labor. And then we weren't anymore. But, I mean, I've never had to worry about what I'm going to eat, obviously. But, you know, so give us this day our daily bread. I never thought, I can't pray that authentically if it means that I'm risking not having bread today. And I know a lot of people in the world, that's okay. It's a very practical prayer for them, but for me, it wouldn't be authentic if it's really how does it become authentic? And it's this: it's like whether the times are easy and the bread comes easy, or the bread is not coming easy, it's still the Lord who provides. And the point of it is a point of understanding and gratitude. Everything I have comes to me from His hand. It's not because I'm cute and clever, although I am. No. Right, it's not any of that. It's the Lord provide, and that's just the way to live. There's a humility there that I think is what He, and a non-pride that He expects from us. And I know for some of us guys, especially, you know, I mean, it's in anybody, but you know, this macho, I got to provide, I'm the provider, and all that kind of stuff. We use those terms. Okay, fine. Well, go ahead and work hard. You should. We're told to. We're commanded to. But at the end of the day, come on, be honest. When you sit at the table and you're having a meal, or you're rejoicing for your house or a car you're able to get or whatever, let's be real about this. That came from the Lord, right? He gives us our daily bread. And so I thought, you know what? He's the one that opens the door. All those times I thought I was opening the door for the 25 times, it was Him, right? Even though it was easy, but it still was Him. Was given that direction. So that's a metaphor I'm using is doors. There's other ways to talk about it, but you're with me on that, right? Okay, daily bread, open doors. Here we go. So that first slide. Wow, we're only on number one. They're there, right? This is a Pastor Dario, and the J is pronounced like a Y, so it's Sylvia. So Dario and Sylvia. Sylvia and Dario have been pastoring in Bosnia for probably 15 or 20 years. They have two really, really nice daughters that I like a lot. And I try to take a day. I was there for a week. I try to take a day, and let's just go do something. Let's go shopping. So the first thing my wife said when she saw the picture was, "What's in the bag?" And you know that shirt I wore yesterday, that long sleeve blue shirt? That was in that bag. I bought that. That's from Bosnia. And so it's been really hard. He's got about a dozen people. And there's a discipleship group he has with four men, and I'm with them. I was with them a couple times this last trip. But Dario and Sylvia, it's a tough thing. But they've got this. So where's the open door here? I mean, they have this apiary. They got a lot of bees now, and it's about an hour and a half from where they live, on the way toward Croatia, and they are now starting to get honey. It's really good, by the way. And in that city near there, I've met the government of the city, of that town. And there's a woman who's interested in maybe having some meeting in her home. And here's this open door. And I told him, I said, you know, brother, you've done such hard work, diligent work, faithful work here in Zenica, and it may be that God's just opening this door. And not to discount this, but here's what he's doing in sending you out. So there they are, Sylvia and Dario. Next slide. These are some of the guys. And these guys all have stories. Oh, my gosh. I like these guys a lot. And they have this discipleship time, Bible study time and everything. And so I went. It's like 2 or 3 hours in the morning. I went to come in a couple of days. And so when we got out of the car, I was with Dario. I got out of his car. I felt like the Lord said, "Go over there and get a loaf of bread, and break bread with these guys." I mean, literally, break bread. I said, "Okay." So Dario gets out and he goes, "Where are you going?" "I'll be right back." So I went over and I bought this loaf of bread that's there, and said, "Well, we don't eat at these things." "All right, well, you do when I'm here, you know." So. We opened it, we have this bread, we share this bread, and they wouldn't take any. So I thought, what the heck? So I went over there, and I took some, and I ate it. I took it, and I went a second time, and then one of the guys came over, and pretty soon, this one guy right in the center, he goes over there, it's a little kitchen in this area where they meet, pulls out some jam and some meat. We started dressing this bread up, and we broke bread together. It was really, really cool. So anyway, and these are the guys that he is faithful to. These are Muslims that came to faith in Christ a number of years ago under his ministry. Next slide. This is a receptionist hotel. I stayed at this hotel called the Carpe Diem. So I Carpe Diem, you know. Seize the day, right? So I seize the day. I'm gonna intrude. I really believe that we have a right to interrupt people's lives, to jump in. I mean, with all respect, but I mean, you know, it's like, really? I may never see her again, so I figured she's going to know who I am, and she's going to know about Jesus for sure. So and she didn't look like a Muslim woman, you know, no hijab, right? But this is a Muslim woman, receptionist at the hotel, and so I was there for a whole week, and she knew I was the guest of Pastor Dario, and she knew why I was there. And, you know, I just treated her with respect. You know, just greet her, look her in the eye and say, "How you doing this morning?" So on the second or third day, I came up, and when I came up the stairs because the hotel is above a restaurant and that, when I came up the stairs, she goes, "You know, it just makes me happy to see you." I said, "Really? Why is that?" She said, "Well, you just, I don't know, it just seems like you care. I don't know, it just makes me happy to see you." I said, "Well, that's cool." So when I got ready to leave, she came around and wanted to give me a hug. I was a little, you know, like, "That's okay." But I said, why don't we take a selfie?" She said, "Okay." So when I go back again, I'll stay at that hotel, and I'm really hoping that she'll be there. And there's a couple other people as well. One of the guys, two of the other gals that were there serving and everything. So I just, you know, brother and sister, I just think we just, to be able to be in people's lives and just God opens the doors for that to happen. So, anyway, isn't she cool? She just, you would like this lady, I promise you. Next slide. This is the apiary they bought. Actually, They were given money to buy a couple churches in the United States to buy, I guess, like 11 acres. And they have, but they put a couple of buildings on it, and they started the apiary. And this is near the city, which is going to be the city where Derventa, where I believe God's going to really open a door of faith to the people in Derventa. Next picture. Okay, well, I'm in Zagreb. I'd never been in Zagreb before. I didn't know what to expect. I thought it was going to be kind of like what Dario's thing was, and it was not. It was, they had about 50 or 60 people, and there were some that were away because it was school holiday time. But this, Mimi was my interpreter. Now, Mimi and her husband, Zoya, and their four daughters, but they came to Christ in 2014. Mimi and her husband, out of a Catholic background. And not, you can be a Catholic, still be a little of the Lord, obviously, but they would have been, Catholicism is the national church for Croatia. Croats are essentially Catholics. Serbs are essentially Orthodox. Anyway, that was her background. So she's just bouncy. And look at her. Don't you want to know her? Next picture is still of her. Next slide. She's like this. You know, at one point, I'm preaching, I go, you know, you're moving more than I am, lady. She's, you know, it's like that. She's just something. Anyway, she's a sweetheart. And after the service, she invited me over to her house. They had four different families that were there for a big meal in the afternoon, fellowship time. And so I went, and the next slide, this is her husband. Man, I love this guy. And Zlayo, he's a contractor, and he loves his wife and four kids. He loves Jesus. And he's got this, he's got an earring and tattoos and beard. And I said, look at you, Zlayo. I said, I want to do that, but my wife said, no, you work in the Muslim world, it wouldn't work. And so, anyway, he's just, again, just a delightful guy. And on the next slide, you'll see what we had. That's their home. They have this special dish. It's called fish, but it's fish, but it's their Croatian word for fish. It's not fish, but it's F-E-S-H. But that's the meal. Just is kind of funny in English. It comes out to be fish, but it's not their word. Anyway, they boil this in this pot, and then they do it with the big noodles. And this cornbread is like none other I've ever had in my life. It was incredible. And next slide. This is just some of us in the kitchen. That's the guy on the right that made it. He's married to this church's secretary. And there's, anyway, just this hanging around 5.5 hours. 5.5 hours. So I went home, back to my hotel. I mean, they took me back to the hotel, and I'm going like, God, I would really like to go back and see them, but they might have had enough of this old white missionary from the United States. You know, it's like, maybe they're just being polite, you know, and so, I don't know. So, I really want to call them, and so I'm going like this, my cell phone, and she texted. And so I just talked to my husband, and we were wondering, would you like to come tomorrow to our house? And it'll be a common meal, not like yesterday, but would you like to come? I said, yeah. So I went to the store next to me, and they have this chocolate bar there called Jimmy Bar. And so and they had six kinds. So I got all six, one for each family member, and I took that as a hostess gift, you know, host gift for having me over again. So I gave them these Jimmy bars, and I thought that was really funny. And so then now they started to call me Jimmy. Okay, that works. So we had a great time at that fellowship there, and I just was so, to me, wonderful that they would actually want to do that. You know, have me come back again. There's a connection there. I don't know really where the Lord's taken that, but there's an open door into that household that God has given the oldest girl, Aisha, is 17. And wants to be in ministry, and it's like I don't know what all that means for them, anyway, I'm just wanting to see. That's an open door. I'm just going to take it. Go however the Lord takes it. Next slide. That might be the last one. Okay. So I want to talk to you about open doors, and I'm going to put the slide up. I want to just talk about nothing. There we go. title of this message here is Wild Beasts and Where to Find Them. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with the movie Curious Beasts, right? Where to Find Them. This is Wild Beasts and Where to Find Them. Beasts tend to show up, and in the life of Paul, they certainly did. I want to just read, there's just four scriptures I want to read, then I want to talk about the connection between wild beast and doors. How are we on time? 11:01? Two more hours? Oh. Throw this man out. But you got me. You really did get me. What the heck? Yeah. All right. Okay, wild beast and where to find them. 1 Corinthians 15:32. Is up there? If I don't, so I'll turn around. Okay. If in the manner of men I have fought with wild beasts at Ephesus, what advantage is it to me? If the dead do not rise, let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. So Paul is he said, in the manner of men I have fought wild beasts at Ephesus. Now we know a little bit about those wild beasts at Ephesus. If you read the book of Acts chapter 18, Paul was in Ephesus, and there was a lot of really good ministry takes place, like he says in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 8 and 9. So I will tarry in Ephesus until Pentecost, for a great and effective door has opened to me, and there are many adversaries. Now, there's this paradox of these two going together, at least from a human perspective, right? A great and effective door for ministry, and there's many adversaries. Why the adversaries? And so I think that's another word for the beast. And by the way, I put wild in, I added wild there. Most of the translations just say beast, but the Greek word is they're wild beasts. These are ferocious, killing beasts. These are not domesticated. You know, you don't find them in the households or whatever. They're out there in the forest or whatever there, and they're ferocious. So that's the word that's used here, not the normal word for beast. So he's got wild beasts. So who's he talking about? Is this figurative language? Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, obviously, this is a figure of speech. It's a metaphor for people, certain individuals. And he calls them, 1 Corinthians, when he's talking about them, he calls them just adversaries. And also he says in the first verse that we read, 1 Corinthians 15:32, if in the manner of men I have fought with wild beasts at Ephesus. So it means that these are men. It's in the manner of men. So just it's about men, but they are described here as wild beasts, and then in the other passage, he refers to them as adversaries, and he says there are many adversaries. So if you read the story in Ephesus, there was really, really effective ministry, but there also was somebody that wanted to be killed, right? There was this worship of Diana, or in Greek word, or Artemis, of the Ephesians, they called her, and they wanted to stone, they wanted to kill Paul. So that was pretty... It was pretty obvious, you know, opposition, right? So he was definitely facing adversaries, and there were many of them, and he was spared from that. But these are the wild beasts that Paul was facing here. Now, to me, it begs the question a little bit like, well, why does there have to be wild beasts? And I'll tell you what, Paul went through a door the Lord had opened, right? And that's where he found wild beast. It's the door the Lord opened, right? God opened those doors, and they were easy doors, right? But he knew it. Still knew it was the Lord. God directed him there, and what did he find on the other side of the doors that God had opened? He found wild beasts. Now he also found people who needed Christ and were coming to Christ. And so that's the whole thing. Whenever we go through a door the Lord opens, it's not about the place, it's about the people. And so when God opens a door to go anywhere, it's like for me and my travels and wonder, it's about the people, obviously, right? And that's why I can go to Bali, Indonesia. I'm the only guy I ever knew that's gone to Bali and didn't go to the beach. You know, I went to church. I mean, it's like, I wanted to go to the beach, it just didn't work out that way. But there was, it's that band, it's about people. It wasn't about the beach. It was about the church. And so the open doors are always about people. When God opens a door for any of us for any reason, for any in anywhere, count on it. It's about people. And you're also likely to encounter a wild beast. Now, some of us have found wild beasts in places we didn't expect to find them. And I know that some of you have known Christ long enough, you've been in the church long enough, you've been in other church, and you know what I'm talking about. Has anybody ever encountered a wild beast at church? I worked for a company in marketing navigation equipment a number of years ago, and that place was full of wild beasts. I mean, full of wild beasts. And I got through the door out, right? I mean, it's like, what? Yeah, we find them in church denominational leadership. We find it in local churches. We find it because it's in the manner of men, right? It's just, it's like the Arabs say, haik, which means that's the way it is. And so we find them where, and we'll find them wherever our door is open, and we still need to walk through the door, right? When God opens the door, we go. But we do find wild beasts. Now, I don't know where you are, any one of you individually, in terms of how that's worked for you. I've been coming here long enough to know that I haven't found a wild beast here yet. Right? I mean. Help me. No, seriously, but there are. I don't know where you are as an individual in your experience with that. But it's something I think that we all have to process, and there's no, I don't think, way to avoid it. It's not by, you just need to say, okay, I faced a wild beast here, and here's what happened to me now. Okay, now how do I go forward here, right? But they are real, and they are really men. First 27-28 of Acts 14, Paul says, he said, from there they, actually Luke is saying, from there they sailed to Antioch, Paul and his apostolic band, where they had been commended by the grace of God for the work they had completed. Now when they had come and gathered the church together, they reported all that God had done with them and that he had opened the door of faith to the Gentiles. Now this is huge. This is after the first missionary journey. And up until this time, the ethnic nature of the church, character of the church, was essentially Jewish. That's where it started, right? And now it's moving out. It moved north into Antioch, and that's where Paul and Silas were sent from. And now, or Paul and Barnabas, right? First time, Barnabas. That's where they were sent from. And the church then, as they got into the Asia Minor, into areas that are more Gentile, they found people responding, non-Jews coming to faith in Christ. And the church began now to take on a Gentile character to it. And there are a lot of people that have a problem with that. But it was a big deal. It was a big deal. And he opened the door of faith to the Gentiles. That was a big deal in the early first century. And because there's a debate on, are Gentiles included? Do they have to become Jews to be Christians? And all this stuff was going on. Not so much now, but certainly in that day it was. And so he says, the board says here, the Lord, opened the door of faith to the Gentiles. I'm glad about that, aren't you? Kind of includes probably all of us here, not most of us, right? So there's this door of faith that God had opened. And Paul, as that door of faith is open to the Gentiles, it later included Ephesus, where they wanted to kill him, right, where these wild beasts were. But he was stoned. He was beaten. He was imprisoned. He was shipwrecked. All that stuff was going on, and yet it was a door of faith. That's kind of the price here a little bit for the door of faith to be open to the Gentiles. That's the thing that's worth looking at here. And so the door of faith got open, and there was bad stuff that he had to experience as well. Last verse, I want to read Colossians 4:2-4. Continue earnestly in prayer, being vigilant in it with thanksgiving. Meanwhile, praying also for us that God would open to us a door for the word to speak the mystery of Christ, for which I am also in chains, that I may make it manifest as I ought to speak. So here are these doors. And in terms of Paul's experience, there was this great and effective door that got opened for a minute in Ephesus. There was more generally before that this door of faith that he'd opened to the Gentiles. And now he refers to it in Colossians as a door for the word to speak for the mystery of Christ, for which I'm also unchanged, that I may make it manifest as I ought to speak. So he's in this passage here, he's asking the church to pray that that God would open the door. So there was apparently still doors that God had not opened yet. Paul says, look, it's God that opens doors, and I'm sure he was some kind of a first century hero, right? As Paul the apostle, he says, look, it's God who opens the doors. And when I go, I'm fighting with him, I'm wrestling with wild beasts, but the Lord opens that door, and so pray that God will open more doors. Now, you got to admire his courage, right? Pray that God will open a door that doesn't have beasts behind it, right? What's wrong with praying that? But honestly, so this is how the door is described, that God opens. It's an effective, a great and effective door. It's a door of faith, and it's a door where the word can be proclaimed. And I would just like to ask you to pray for me in this regard, because I really want the doors to open. I'm not a fan of wild beasts, but I have faced them in places where the Lord has directed us, notably when we were in Alexandria. I talk a lot about the good things that happened in Alexandria, Egypt. But there were a couple of elders in the church, missionaries, that took on a wild beast role in the manner of men. And the Lord helped me deal with that. Same happened when we were in Turkey, in Ankara, Turkey. There were some wild beasts. And that was a great ministry. So many good things were happening. I mean, even the young people like me. No, we had a strong youth group thing going on. I ministered to them. We had this Iranian church that doubled in size. We had 400 or 500 people in the services with Turks coming to Christ. I had top CIA people, the top two CIA guys were in my church, including the guy that took the money to the doctor that told him where Osama bin Laden was. Seriously, the guy was in my church. There was embassy personnel, and it was wonderful. And then there was this fighting wild beast, and it's like, what? So I know a little bit what that's like to face that in the church, but it's other places as well. Amen. So I don't know what you're facing if you're currently involved fighting a wild beast. You don't want to tell me, right? No, that's okay. But if you are, just know that it's a door the Lord has opened, and you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay. You're where you're supposed to be, and you're with people with whom you're supposed to be. That's an important thing to remember. I'm going to finish, okay, by telling one story. Yeah, even though it's 12:11 on some people's clocks. Yeah, the story is this. We were in Alexandria, Egypt, and I had gone up to find an apartment. We were still living in Cairo because our youngest daughter was still in high school. She's in her last year of high school. I started pastoring the church when she was a senior. So I commuted up, and then I often would stay like 3 or 4 days up there and then come back home for 3 or 4 days. So we did that for several months. So I found this apartment that Connie was like, really, Jim? 34 steps up. It was a granny flat or a mother-in-law flat. I don't know why it has to be a granny flat. It can't be a grandpa flat or a father-in-law flat. Right, really? Not that I wouldn't want it that way. Right? I mean, you know, male auto stream. And so maybe she lived to 120. But anyway, so I got this place, and it was really a villa. It's really a fantastic place in a good part of town, and the Lord just led us to it. And so there were two floors where the family, husband and wife, lived. The kids were all gone. Two of them were in the States. and one was in school at Cairo American College. American University in Cairo. Now, the American University in Cairo and the American University in Beirut are the two top schools in the whole Middle East. Both of them were started by missionaries. They've gone away from that. But basically, it's like the top 2% of Arab kids go to these schools. And they all got fancy cars and whatever. They got money and whatever. But the American University in Cairo is where her son, is remarried to them, but where her son went. So that'll figure in the story in a minute. But so we got settled in there, and his wife just frequently went off the rails. She didn't like where I parked my car. She yelled at me, and I said, well, where do you suggest? I mean, I'm assuming it's going to be on the street, you know, but she wouldn't want me to park right in front of the gate. But they had their gate down here. This is my gate. I said, okay, I'll park up here. No, you can't park up there. So and then she started yelling at me for something else, and she just, one day she was screaming at me, I said, listen, you just really can't talk to me this way. You shouldn't talk to anybody this way. I am not your husband. I am not your son. I'm not your servant. And you shouldn't be talking to them that way either. But stop talking to me. You just got to, I really want to get along, but you got to. She just came out and attacked me. So I pay the rent, and the way the landlord wanted it was I go down to his place, and he'd open the door, and we'd sit outside, and I'd pay him the rent, and we'd have a cup of tea or coffee. And one night I was talking to him, and he goes, third or fourth month in, he goes, Jim, tell me. He says, he's a successful businessman, import-export business in textiles. The guy had money. He says, you know, I love my family. I said, I can tell. He said, I'm good at what I do in my job. Yeah. He says, but tell me, as good as all that is, tell me there's got to be more to my life. I said, well, yeah, talk about an open door, right? I said, okay. So I talked to him about my view of that. I said, I love my family. And I think I do a decent job in my work as well. And here's the more. So we talked about the Lord and what he could do for him and how God loved him. Anyway, through the whole thing that you're familiar with, I'm sure. And he would always be him. She wouldn't have anything to do with me. I mean, she just wouldn't. And so after several months, I came, like 6 or 7 months there, I came, I knocked on the door, and she answered the door. I said, come on in, Jim. I said, why? Because I thought, come in with my, said the spider to the fly, right? I think it's just, how's it coming to my parlor? Is that what it is? I go, no, I learned that as a child. You don't do things like that. I said, okay. She said, so my husband's in the little library. Okay. So I went around to a place that we sometimes sat and had big analysts. Anyway, so he was there and I sat down and I'm thinking, this is weird. This is just weird. And so she comes back and says, well, can I, would you want some tea or coffee? I said, what are you serving? So I'll take tea. Okay. So she brought in tea and cookies and little sandwiches. I'm going like, what the? Now, it's about 10 o'clock at night because that's when he liked to do this because Egyptians are nocturnal. I mean, they just are. You know that, right? They're just nocturnal. They stay up because it's hot during the day and whatever. So I had actually 2 appointments after that that I called and canceled because I could tell this was going to go. I'll tell you why. So she brought them in. So she answered the door. Talk about open door, right? She opened the door. She took me to where I was supposed to be. She brought in refreshments. And then she did the unthinkable. She sat down with us. I'm going, whoa, something is up here. So she goes, oh, Jim, I was wondering. I said, I bet you were. I was wondering, what do you think about the Passion of Christ? you know, Mel Gibson movie. We're familiar, right? I said, well, I know it's in the theaters. And here's what happened. In Egypt, the Grand Mufti, or whatever he's called, at the Al-Azhar University said that this movie can be shown throughout Egypt because he perceived it to be anti-Jewish, anti-Israel. And because of that, and so you'd go and they'd have these banners like two or three times the size of these on the walls at the, where the theater was. Four out of the six theaters, near the one near us, were showing this film at the same time. And it's like, there were leaflets and flyers, there were banners, commercials. I mean, it's like they're advertising the passion of Christ because it's anti-Jewish. And I'm going like, and I already like Jesus, you know what I'm saying? The fact that he would set this up was like, what? Unbelievable. So she goes, well, I just have a question for you about that. You're familiar. I said, yeah, I know the story. She said, well, do you believe it had to be Jesus that died on the cross? Now, I understand the Islamic view that it was that God would not do that to his son, so he substituted somebody else. Well, that poor schmuck, right? I mean, right? He didn't crucify his son, but he let some Joseph over here get crucified. What's up with that? No, no. So it's like, I'm familiar with that idea. It's a part of their whole shtick, you know, their theology. So did it have to be Jesus, do you believe? I said, yes, it did. She goes, why? Now, I wanted to say, are you kidding me? Is this really happening? I mean, are you kidding? It's like I would have waited. I mean, it was worth all the yelling at. I would have waited a long time to hear. I mean, talk about an open door. So I said, she said, why? I said, well, here's the deal. Now, I had passable Arabic for just conversing, but I couldn't approach this subject like it needed to be. His English was more than adequate, and hers was not. So I'm telling him, I'm going to say it in English, and he stops me, and then he says it to her. And then I go up and to her. And then she has a question back to him. Did you mean this? Yes, I meant this. I'll say it again. Okay. So we're going on. This went on for an hour and a half, where we're going back and forth. And it was a pretty clear, simple, but it was a clear gospel thing about all why it had to be Jesus and what was accomplished because of that, what God's purpose was in all of that. And it went on and on, like I said. And so it was incredible, just absolutely incredible. And I had other missionary friends that had similar conversations. People, it really opened up a lot of evangelism. In fact, there was a young man that came, his name was Muhammad, came to faith in Christ, and he was shown this film. We were discipling him. And he was showing this pirated copy. I said, Misha, how can you do that? Pirate a copy about Jesus. Come on, man. And showing it to his friends at college. He was a pre-med student, smart kid. Anyway, she goes, so we're going through this. And I said, well, can I ask you why you're asking this? I got beyond why you opened the door. I mean, I knew now, right? So can I ask him, why are you asking this? She says, well, she has a son who had the American University in Cairo. And one of his instructors, I knew of at least three missionaries who were instructors at this university. I think I know which one it was. Had them, his class, watch the film in class. And so they're talking about it. Because she talked to him all the time. It's her pride and joy. So she's talking to him on the phone. She goes, well, what? So you saw it? Yeah. He says, well, you know, she says, you know, it wasn't Jesus on the cross. And he said, well, Mom, they believe it was. I mean, we can believe what we want to believe, but I mean, you know, Muslims don't believe it was, but they believe it was Jesus. So I'm good with that. She goes, she got enraged and yelled at him that big fight over that whole thing. And that's how it came up, was through the film being watched by her son, and that led to this whole thing. Now, you know, I'd like to tell you that she came to the Lord. I don't know. But I know she heard. And the beauty of it is, so did he. Yeah. And you know, when you walk away from these situations, just like this lady yesterday in the plane, you don't get to see always it follow through. But if you just simply go through the door that he opens, and trust me, she was a wild beast of a significant kind. Right? I just want to encourage you. And it doesn't need to be fantastic. Is it a fantastic beast? Or one? Anyway. It doesn't have to be like, you know, you hear, oh, you know, you hear this, you know. It doesn't have to be that. It can be just a simple thing where you're getting gas or you're in a grocery store or whatever. It can be a simple contact, just, but you're there because, and God opens a door for you. And remember, it's always about people. I don't think you have to work real hard. You don't need to change your personality. You don't have to change anything about yourself. Just breathe. We do that, right? Yeah, I'll pass. Just breathe and go about doing what you do. And I promise you that the Lord will open doors. He just will. I want that, don't you? Yeah, I really do. Not so sure about the wild beast, but yeah. But Jesus knew all about wild beasts, didn't he? You know, and he conquered them. And we also conquer. There's, you know, one of my favorite descriptions for us that Jesus gives is we are children of the resurrection. We will live and not die. And so whenever you face a wild beast and you feel like something died, there's always resurrection because we're children of the resurrection. Death in anything, death of a dream, death of a vision, death of anything, of a hope, it's never the last. You know, there's always resurrection. Amen. Good place to live. All right. Thanks a lot. You're so good. I love being here, but God bless you all.